Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hey, it's Avery Trufelman, host of Articles of Interest. And I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid, and I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
From KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. In June of 2018, Jermaine Charlot left a bar in downtown Missoula, Montana, turned a corner, and was never seen again. She was 23 years old, a mother of two, and Indigenous. Her case has not yet been solved. My guest, Connie Walker, has chronicled the investigation of Charlot's disappearance and her life in a podcast titled Stolen. And Connie Walker joins us now. A warning, though, to listeners that we will be talking about murder and sexual violence in this segment, so please take care. Connie Walker, welcome to Forum.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to join you.
Can you tell us a little bit more about who Jermaine Charlot was and what drew you to her case?
Sure. Jermaine Charlot is a 23-year-old mother of two young boys. She was a member of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes in Montana. And in speaking with her family and friends for the podcast, they told me about how Jermaine was, you know, a funny, playful, loving mother who, was really beloved by her family and is so missed by them. Jermaine is one of, unfortunately, thousands of missing or murdered Indigenous women and girls in Canada and in the United States. And her family's story, as tragic and heartbreaking as it is not unique. So there are so many cases like Jermaine's and so many stories like Jermaine's that deserve attention.
Yes.
But as soon as I heard about Jermaine, I knew that I wanted to know more about her disappearance and her life.
Can you tell us the basic contours of what did happen to her, of her disappearance?
Sure. I mean, Jermaine was in June of 2018, June 15th. She was one of hundreds of other young people in downtown Missoula. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's a really vibrant college town. And on a Friday night, she was out enjoying the night, and she was last captured on that surveillance footage after she left a bar called the Badlander in downtown Missoula. And she walked down that alley and turned a corner and was never seen again. And her family, you know, the very next day, as soon as they couldn't reach Jermaine and didn't hear from her, they were immediately concerned. They knew that Jermaine always texted back. She always called back. She was never without her phone. She was very active on social media. So even a day without hearing from Jermaine, her family was very concerned and tried to report her missing. And it's been two and a half years. It'll be 3 years in June, and her family is still looking for Jermaine and still searching for her and still, you know, demanding answers about not only the truth about her disappearance, but really trying to understand why almost 3 years later, they haven't been able to find Jermaine and to bring her home.
Yes. I want to play a little bit from the podcast. One of the things that was so striking and tragic, really, is that as you are talking to Jermaine's family and friends about her, you learn that they were also victims of terrible violence. This is Jermaine's best friend, Jocelyn, confiding in you.
We get raped. We get murdered. Sometimes stuff doesn't get done about it. Sometimes they just brush it up under the rug, drop charges that, you know, were being filed. because I actually had a rapist out there. So I kind of really didn't have anyone to talk to about it.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Happened when I was 13 years old.
Oh, no.
I didn't know what was going on. It happened, and I didn't say nothing to my mom and dad because I didn't want to go through with anything. I wanted to pretend that it didn't happen.
And that is from the podcast Stolen that is hosted by my guest journalist, Connie Walker, who has been covering Indigenous women for decades, who's been a journalist for decades and been covering the situation of Indigenous peoples and Indigenous women for a long time now. You know, you hear that from Jocelyn. You also hear from Jermaine's Aunt Danny, whose ex-husband is now in prison, tried to kill her, that her grandmother Vicky and her mother Jen are also people who have experienced violence. And you make this realization that every single woman you met on the Flathead Reservation was a survivor of violence. And I just wonder what impression that must leave on you or what insights it gives you into Jermaine's life.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm an Indigenous woman. I'm Cree from Canada, and I grew up in my community. So, you know, I know from my own lived experience that so many Indigenous women experience and are survivors of terrible violence. And that's what's led to this crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in Canada and in the United States. And I think that you know, especially on days like today, which is May 5th, which is just been proclaimed a national day of awareness about missing and murdered Indigenous people. Yes. You know, I think you hear about the statistics a lot. You hear about the numbers, more than 80% of Indigenous women will experience violence. You know, more than one in two will experience some form of sexual violence. But really getting to travel to Montana and to the Flathead Reservation and to meet these women like Jocelyn and Jermaine's family members and to learn about the violence Jermaine survived, in her life and experienced throughout her life, you know, it really, I think the goal is to help illustrate how there are real people at the center of those statistics and real people at the center of this violence, that this is not just an issue. This is not, you know, these are not just numbers, that every single case is a woman or a girl who was a mother or a daughter or a sister, an auntie, and who leaves behind all of these women who themselves are grappling with the violence and the trauma that's interwoven within that, and are, you know, forced to kind of keep going, and who then become advocates and activists themselves, and are really the ones who are pushing this issue into the spotlight.
We're talking with Connie Walker, host of the Gimlet Media podcast, Stolen, The Search for Jermaine. Connie Walker is also former host of CBC News Network's Missing and Murdered podcast. And you, our listeners, if you'd like to join the conversation, can do so by calling 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can get in touch on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum or email us forum@kqed.org. If you're reacting to Jermaine's story or what Connie Walker is telling you about the violence experienced by Indigenous women in the U.S. and Canada, feel free to share that with us or whatever questions you may have. You know, Connie Walker, as I listen to you cite those numbers, I also understand that there is strong agreement that it is likely a significant undercount.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about why it is so hard to get consistent numbers?
Well, I think especially, I mean, what I've been learning about in reporting in the U.S. is that it's really like a patchwork of jurisdictions that Indigenous people, you know, have to grapple with, and they become really significant hurdles. You know, Jermaine's family, for example, you know, they were immediately concerned and they wanted to report her missing, and they reported her missing to the tribal police on Sunday because she was a member of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes, and she was a tribal member and she lived on the reservation. But because she was last seen in Missoula, she also needed to be reported missing to the Missoula City Police. And that was something that ended up taking multiple days. And then her family members actually had to go into Missoula to do that. But on the Flathead Reservation, you know, there are actually five different sheriff's counties that have jurisdiction on the reservation. So depending on where you are on this reservation, when you call police for help, a different agency could respond. And I think that there there then are some other reservations that have, you know, Bureau of Indian Affairs and an FBI oversight. And then obviously, you know, a large number of Indigenous people live in urban centers and communities. And so are also dealing with city police. So I think that this patchwork of jurisdictions makes it really hard to understand the scope of the problem, but it also, you know, creates these hurdles that family members and people have to navigate, even in reporting somebody missing or trying to access or get access to law enforcement. But I think we also have to really be conscious of, and the podcast is also, you know, we're very much focused on Jermaine's disappearance and trying to find the answers about what happened to her. And in even asking that question, you know, I know that Jermaine's story didn't begin on the night that she disappeared, that it really, you know, her entire life was impacted by the truth about the history of the land that we're all on. And so much of this crisis is connected back to that history and what we don't understand about Indigenous people and how we've been affected by colonization, how we've been affected by institutional racism, and how that is contributing to this crisis of violence. So, you know, our podcast is trying to do kind of two things in helping people understand Jermaine's story, but also how she's connected back to this bigger crisis and this bigger issue of violence that all Indigenous women and girls are facing.
Yes, yes, you do interweave that quite effectively in your podcast. And I did want to ask you about what you thought of the efforts now at the federal level. So we have Secretary Deb Haaland, who has launched basically an agency that would specifically look at murders and missing persons, those cases in Indian country. Can you talk about this step and what you think it could mean in terms of some level of attention and accountability that has been missing?
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of remarkable, especially today. I'm so glad that we're talking today because this May 5th is a day that advocates and activists have been marketing for years to raise awareness about this issue of violence in Indigenous communities. But I've never seen the visibility that I'm seeing today ever before. Like, there's so much attention being paid on social media by, you know, programs like yourself across the country. And yesterday, President Biden proclaimed that today is a National Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Awareness Day. And that, coupled with Deb Haaland's announcement a few weeks ago about the creation of this unit that is going to look at unsolved cases of murdered and missing Indigenous peoples, I think is hugely significant. You know, I think that this crisis of violence is not new. This has been ongoing in our communities for decades. You know, this is something that we have been well aware of. But the fact is that it has gone largely ignored, in mainstream media, and therefore, you know, by law enforcement sometimes, by politicians sometimes. And so this I think it's quite significant, especially for families who, like Jermaine's family, are still desperate for answers, who are still longing to bring their loved ones home or to find some form of justice. And when you're a family going through some terrible trauma, like your loved one's been missing or has been killed, and you don't feel that you can turn to law enforcement, or you don't feel that they're taking it seriously enough, I think that the announcement of a unit that is going to be dedicated to helping to solve these cases is incredibly welcome and brings hope. But even beyond that, I think that just the awareness and acknowledgement that this is a crisis, that this is an important issue, and how it's, and beginning to kind of understand how that's connected back to this bigger story. It feels very significant.
One of the things that you also talk about with regard to violence is that sexual violence is such a big part of Jermaine's life, of the life on the reservation, in terms of when you spoke with Jocelyn about rape and murder. And there is this moment when you talk with an advocate of people who have experienced sexual violence, Lauren Small Rodriguez, a member of the Northern Cheyenne tribe, who actually told you about Jermaine's case. Mm-hmm. She tells you how incredibly frightened Indigenous women are of being taken, of being potentially sexually assaulted. I want to play a little bit of what she says to you here, which is heartbreaking.
You have to be on alert because you can be harassed, you can be, you know, groped, You can be followed to your car. You can be pushed in. You can be kidnapped. And so we were always taught, if someone throws you in the car, if someone tries to kidnap you, scream and fight and gouge eyes, do whatever you can, because that's going to be your last chance of fighting for your life. Even if there's a gun involved, you need to fight. Don't let a weapon scare you, because it's either you fighting back or, you know, being murdered.
That's a clip from Stolen, The Search for Jermaine, a podcast hosted by my guest, Connie Walker. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Connie Walker, what have you, over your years of covering these kinds of stories, learned about why Indigenous women are so vulnerable to violence? You've talked some about the broader systemic issues, the history of colonization, you know, broken treaties and racism. What are we not understanding?
I mean, I think that really what this issue is doing is it's providing a window into understanding the realities that, you know, all Indigenous people live and experience in our communities today. You know, what Lauren was talking about, that fear of being taken, that fear of being a victim of some kind of violence is so visceral and real, and you can hear it in her voice, because that is something that is genuine. You know, she talked to me about, you know, being concerned about, you know, stopping, you know, for a gas or going to use a public bathroom in some of these truck stops. And I think that for people, I think, who have been so underrepresented in mainstream media, I mean, I'm talking about Indigenous people, and often when we are included, it's a misrepresentation. I think that, you know, we really have to start at the beginning and think about all of the things that we don't understand about the realities that Indigenous people live and experience. And the rates of violence is one part of that, you know, and I think that it can't be separated from the truth about our shared history. You know, Indigenous people have been living alongside settlers for hundreds of years now. And when you think about, you know, what is our understanding of that history? What is our understanding of the Indigenous perspective of that history? It's very limited, you know, in terms of what we're taught in schools and what we learn about in mainstream media. And our podcast is, you know, is meant to be you know, a chance, a glimpse into a reality that far too many Indigenous people experience. And the truths that Lauren speaks about are truths that come from lived experience. You know, she works with trafficking victims. She works with survivors, Indigenous women who have been trafficked. She has family members who have been victims of violence. You know, this is a reality that so many Indigenous people live and experience.
Well, this listener writes, there are people who don't see Native women as human. Where are you now with the Jermaine Charlo case? I was seeing some reports that you feel like there's you could be close, or that the investigators could be close to some information that could bring about a resolution, or at least some answers.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely going to continue to report on any and all developments in Jermaine's case. You know, I think that what the podcast has been able to do is really shine a light on Jermaine's case and I don't want to, you know, I know people are very concerned about spoilers. I don't want to give any away, but I feel like, you know, we're able to provide a lot of insight into the police investigation into Jermaine's disappearance, which, you know, I think one of the biggest takeaways for me is that, you know, she was reported missing, you know, 5 days after she went missing. And then there was a detective who was assigned to her case, but he only worked on it for one day before he went on his vacation. So really the investigation, the police investigation into Jermaine's disappearance by the Missoula City Police Department didn't start until 11 days after her disappearance. And her family is still questioning, you know, what was lost in those 11 days, what information could they have gotten if there was a quicker response. And I think that, you know, there are absolutely, like, this is still an open and active investigation. The detective who's been working on this for the last 2.5 years, Detective Guy Baker, you know, says he is still actively working on Jermaine's case every week. And absolutely, you know, if and when there are developments, those are things that we're going to continue to follow.
Connie Walker, thank you so much for talking with us. I really appreciate it, and for your work on this.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate, you know, you helping to make space for this conversation.
Thank you. The podcast is Stolen, The Search for Germaine from Gimlet Media. And I want to thank our listeners for their attention this hour, and to our producers, Susan Britton and Grace One, for producing today's segments. You've been listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.